and he's got some cracking achievements. So first of all, we asked him about his sporting life.
Well, I used to be a swimmer first. I used to be a national level swimmer. And badminton was just a social thing I did in school. And then as time went on, I got older, swimming became a little bit harder, and it was I decided to retire from competitive swimming, but I carried on playing badminton socially. And then over the years, I've played socially with friends from university, colleagues from work. And then one day, just when I was playing with colleagues from work, I got spotted by a badminton coach who asked me if I wanted to compete in para badminton. So I said, yeah, why not? Because I've always played with able-bodied people, just taking part and, you know, having fun. So I thought, well, why not give it a go and see if I can compete with, you know, other disabled people? And yeah, in 2007, I took part in my first tournament, lost all my singles events, but somehow ended up winning the men's doubles. And then I vowed after that I was going to up the training, and I wouldn't happen to me again to lose all my singles. And from then on, I went on to win 10 British titles back to back.
What sort of competitions did you do, Gurley?
Did the Four Nations, which is England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. Then there's various European events, like Open Internationals, European Championships, and I've also taken part in 3 World Championships in Korea, Guatemala, and Germany.
Wow. And you said you won, was it 10 medals?
I've won 10 back-to-back British titles, singles, but I've won numerous medals. The last medal, major medal I won, was a silver medal at the World Championships last year.
I've got to say, that deserves a round of applause. I mean, come on, that is fantastic. Do you know something? You know, sitting here, I've got to be perfectly honest. I mean, I'm an able-bodied person, and I've played sports in life, but I've never actually done anything with it. Do you find that when you do something, you're far more motivated because you actually want to be in that society?
I think there's definitely an element of that. I've always wanted to prove that the disability is not going to stop me. So I've always had that motivation to go out there and try and achieve. And fortunately for me, with my family and friends, they've always encouraged, you know, encouraged me in whatever I'm doing. So that's a massive help as well. But yeah, it doesn't matter what I'm trying to do. I always try. I'm highly competitive anyway, whether it's Tiddlywinks or on the PlayStation, or, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, but I'm competitive by nature.
What about joining Shine? This is what he's had to say about that.
It, mainly through badminton, to be honest. I was obviously in my early years as a competitive badminton player. I was being fairly successful, and Shine got in touch with me, and they thought I'd be a good role model for a campaign they had called Fit for Success, and that was to try and encourage our members in Shine to be more active. And success doesn't have to come in the form of being an elite athlete or anything like that. It could just be getting out of bed and being independent for the day, or getting yourself dressed, or achieving something that's possible for you that would otherwise be a little bit harder. So they got me on board with that campaign, and then before I knew it, within a couple of years of that, there was a job going here, and I thought I'd apply, and lo and behold, here I am as the membership development officer, loving every minute. Now, that role actually is multifaceted. In a nutshell, I need to try and increase members for Shine and the Shine community, but also partly it's a personal experience as well, but I want to try and engage with members and try and get them more sort of involved and engaged with the charity, and also more active in their lifestyles as well, and try and encourage them. I mean, it's aimed at mainly people with spina bifida and hydrocephalus, which is the other disability that we deal with within the charity. But there's no reason why some of the messages and things that I try and do to, you know, encourage our members doesn't have to, you know, apply for able-bodied people as well. I mean, you know, getting out there, living your life, and, you know, really making the most of what you've got should apply to everybody. You shouldn't just have to be having a disability to say, all right, you need to achieve something. Everybody can achieve something.
But then again, you see, I mean, like, if they did come here as an able-bodied person, they could also sort of like interact with people That you wouldn't normally meet, wouldn't you? Just anyway, it's like...
That's right. They'll get to meet the members, and they'll see different types of members and how the disabilities affect them in different ways. And spina bifida and hydrocephalus can be varying in degrees of severity, and ultimately will define each person in a unique way. And because of that, when you meet members, every time it's going to be a different experience, because such is the disability. Now, from that, I think it educates able-bodied people, because, you know, it opens their eyes that not everybody's the same in the world. And even if you do have a type of disability, doesn't mean that that person is going to be exactly the same as well. Because generally there's that stereotyping that, say, somebody's in a wheelchair, well, that person is going to be of a certain character. Well, I know plenty of people in wheelchairs, and there's loads of different characters going around, trust me. And so, you know, it's the same with hydrocephalus, that there's a whole spectrum of characters that, you know, you can meet, and personalities. So, you know, I think it's an education for everybody. Spina bifida is basically a neural tube defect, and spina bifida actually translates as split spine. It's something you have from birth.
Okay.
I've not known any different. I've been, obviously, like I say, I've experienced it all through my life, and I've just got on with it. It affects people in different ways. For me, it affects my mobility and continence. I've had numerous amounts of surgery to correct things or try and assist me as best possible. Much of the early years are disrupted through surgery, because as you're growing, they're trying to get things sorted for you to make life as easy as possible for adulthood. So your schooling and social life is very much affected. So you're not always around during school because you're in hospital having surgery. And obviously there's recovery time, and sometimes you end up having home tuition, or even in hospital actually you have tuition. So you're very much disrupted in the early years, or certainly for me in my situation. And then socially as well, you're not always going through the same as others, because where people are going to parties and going out socially, A, you're not always confident enough to go out or mobile enough.
Yeah.
And B, I think there's a fear factor with other people in terms of, oh, is that kid able to come out? You know, he uses his wheelchair. Is he going to be able to join in? So it works on two levels. There's a fear factor on other people's part, as well as a confidence thing on your own part. You know, I've done the university thing. I lived on site at university as well. So I've done the partying hard thing and taking part in sport and just generally socialising with my sort of classmates. And right, hydrocephalus is effectively sort of fluid on the brain. It's the cerebral fluid which doesn't drain properly and can cause the brain to swell. And that has a lasting impact, varying in severity with each person. Some people might have minor learning difficulties, or it can affect some others in memory issues. It does vary quite considerably.
Okay.
And I'd say in some instances, it's not even noticeable. You can walk past somebody in the street and not realise they've got hydrocephalus. There are cases where you can see, you can visibly see, because of the shape of the head, because of the swelling, that they've got hydrocephalus. But there are plenty of cases where it's not noticeable. And so it's often mistaken as people just being lazy or being thick or something like that, and actually they've got this hidden disability that affects them every day, and it's quite severe in some cases. Some people have what's called arrested hydrocephalus, where because it doesn't go away, but it just doesn't affect them so much. I mean, there might still be some sort of effect on them from early on, that it's affected them in some way, but it's no longer causing them a problem, as it were. But ultimately, yes, it can be quite worrying. I mean, I'm in the minority with having just spina bifida. But quite often, some people can have spina bifida and hydrocephalus together. So you can imagine the difficulties involved with managing two very different types of disabilities with one person. So somebody's got potentially a learning disability, as well as the physical disabilities that I've described in terms of mobility and continence. Now, that can lead to all sorts of complications for an individual. And that's actually one of my roles as well. I mean, as well as I said, interacting with members and increasing member numbers, I try and raise awareness, and I try and, along the line, sort of fundraise as well. And they sort of go hand in hand. By sort of raising awareness, you're increasing your chances of fundraising. And I use different means of doing that, visiting schools and visiting members in other areas and just getting them to spread the message. I engage with sports clubs around the country, professional and amateur as well. You know, there's different football clubs I've been to visit, as well as, you know, rugby clubs as well. And because the thinking behind that is those sort of areas, they have lots of spectators.
That's right.
So you can target a large audience with minimal effort, and, you know, in one hit when they're hosting a match. And it might be that somebody who's attending the match, a supporter, might have a connection with the charity, or might feel compelled to run for the charity. You know, they think, oh, do you know what, never heard of that charity, but because that club has got an affiliation to the charity, which is one of the things I do, try and create some community links. Football fans and rugby fans, they're strange in that they like brand loyalty. So if they know their football club is supporting a certain charity or organisation, yeah, they might then say, well, actually, because the club's doing it, do you know what, I'm going to do the same. So
absolutely,
that's my thinking behind it. So that's why I try and my approach in terms of increasing member numbers, etc., you know, it is quite broad, and I do different approaches in trying to achieve my goals. Yeah, I think in the main, the actual wearing yellow part is a fun thing for them. It means they don't have to wear school uniforms.
That's right.
So that's quite exciting for them. My personal experience when I've gone into schools to talk about my disability and my sporting background, I find it really interesting. They hang on to my every word generally. And I think it's because, more often than not, disabled people aren't really necessarily in the limelight to talk about what they can and can't do. So when somebody's there in front of them in a school assembly or in their classroom and is actually talking about some of the things they've achieved, I think they find it incredible on two levels. On one side is like, wow, we've got somebody here with a disability who's kind of just coming to school talking to us.
Yeah.
But then they hear about what I've achieved and what I'm doing in my badminton career and what I'm doing with Shine, and realizing that actually, wow, he's got a disability and he's doing all this.
It's inspiring, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think for them it just suddenly, it just sparks a little bit of inspiration in them that actually, do you know what, I can do something. You know, there's no reason why they can't achieve anything. So I always find the schools visit is quite interesting, and the feedback generally I get is positive, and the response from the school is generally positive. They will get involved in, it might not be Wear Yellow and Shine, but it might be other fundraising activities they do within the school. I've been to a school in Bedfordshire where they did a mini enterprise week where they were baking cakes and making crafts, and all the fundraising and all the money they made from those events came to Shine.
That's
so
fantastic.
You know, it's yeah, just one of those things where the school can take part in whatever they want to do. But Wear Yellow and Shine is probably one of the easiest. You know, it doesn't require a lot. Funding for Shine obviously is of paramount, you know, importance. It's, you know, without any funding we would be struggling, and we've got our corporate sort of funding and grants and things, and one of the main ones one of the ones we've got at the moment is through Roald Dahl's Marvellous Children's Charity, and through that we've got a project called Shine Reflections, and that is effectively, basically, the funding for that has allowed us to make three short sort of videos about people living with spina bifida and hydrocephalus. It's a really big project, quite an exciting project for the charity, and ultimately what it will do for the charity is to serve our members to come to the organisation, and they'll be able to access a number of services that will be, I'd say, unique in terms of like what other charities offer. We'll be offering quite a good healthcare service, where people can come for a bit of a health check, really. Check things like the blood pressures, bladder scans, mobility issues, any advice regarding pressure sores, you know, things that our members encounter on a regular basis. And coupled with that, within the healthcare centre, we're going to have a special kitchen made up as well, so people can come and take part in independence events, so they can sort of, you know, learn to do sort of bits of basic cooking and those domestic work in the kitchen area, which would normally be, I suppose, a no-go area because worktops are too high, ovens are too low or too high, and you can't get under the sink.
And it could be a particularly dangerous environment.
It can be a very tricky environment to work in. And so by having a specially adapted kitchen, we can help to show, A, obviously the facilities are out there to be independent, but also just to give some basic skills in terms of doing like cooking and stuff like that, that they might not otherwise think would be possible. Like myself, I've been a wheelchair user for a number of years. Now, some may be walkers, you know, who've got mobility issues, that they're now at a point in their life where walking's no longer a possibility, and that actually, to make life easier, they have to transfer to a wheelchair. And it might not be for, you know, full-time use, but most of the time when they're traveling out, when they're in town shopping or whatever, they need to use a wheelchair. Now, they're not going to have the knowledge of how to use a wheelchair. They see other people using it, but it's not as straightforward as just jumping in a chair and whizzing around.
No, it's not. No.
There's a whole different, you know, there's coordination issues, there's actually knowing how the wheelchair handles moving the chair, stopping the chair, turning the chair, encountering obstacles that people wouldn't normally think about. I mean, drop curves are obviously fairly sort of common these days, but you still come across places where there aren't drop curbs. So it's just showing people that if you can get up and down curbs in your chair, you know, there's those sort of skills, being able to tip the chair ever so slightly to get over a lip, carrying shopping, and just actually just knowing how to handle the chair in everyday use is going to be valuable for them.
Absolutely. I just had a vision there of myself being in a wheelchair, suddenly tipping backwards and going straight over the top.
The number of people that have a go in my wheelchair, and in the first few minutes they're turning and they're wheeling forward and they think, oh, this is all jolly good. And then 5 minutes later, they're flat on their back. They've just miscontrolled the chair, pushed it too hard, and that's it. Rich Dassel, the chairman, he's been taking part in a number of different activities from various marathons. I think he's doing a trek in Morocco coming up very soon. The Great North Run, there's the Great Eastern Run as well. So there's a lot of quite physical challenges that he's taking part in, and each one is raising an element of money that's going towards
the new
the Health and Wellbeing Centre. So, you know, that's a massive boost for us, you know.
It is indeed. And I've got to say, there's one that sounds like a bit of fun here. I don't know if it is. The Santa Dash in December, like, you know what I mean? Is he going to dress up in a red costume, do you think?
Yeah, I think he will be. So, I mean, you've got to get in the spirit of things, haven't you? So I can see Richard doing that, dressing up and doing the Santa Dash. So, yeah, I'm sure that'll be there. So we'll be sure to get photographs if he does. During the Awareness Week, I mean, we try and engage with loads of areas in the community. A lot of our members who will take part in fundraising events, it might be schools wearing yellow and shining effectively. So what they do is on a given day during that week, they do like a non-uniform day where everybody wears yellow and they might pay £1 or something for the privilege of doing so. And then that goes towards our sort of Awareness Week and our fundraising as well. But obviously with the Awareness Week, what we're trying to do is obviously raise awareness.
Yeah.
And by getting the message across, again, we're letting people know that A, we exist as a charity, and that we're here for people with spina bifida and hydrocephalus. But also it helps to educate other people to say, do you know what, we're here as a charity. We're not as mainstream as Cancer Research or, you know, Macmillan, you know, nurses or anything like that. But we still need support and awareness in our own right. And so by raising awareness during that week, it lets other people know that we're there, and they might just make an educated decision in terms of, do you know what, well, when I do my next fundraiser or my next marathon or whatever, I'm going to do it for Shine because they know about us. And it might be they have a connection with us as well because somebody they know has got spina bifida and or hydrocephalus, or, you know, they might be themselves affected by it. So for us, you know, Awareness Week is quite important, because as much as we're doing stuff all year round, if we can focus on the charity during the week or the condition, spine bifida and hydrocephalus, during that week, and we can get as many people involved to do their bit, it suddenly increases sort of the our profile.
Just one thing we haven't mentioned is actually, when is this on? Because this is actually on nationally, isn't it? Right, it's on across Ireland, Scotland and Wales.
Yes, it's because we cover the whole of England, Northern Ireland and Wales. It's obviously, we've got massive scope to reach out to people.
Absolutely.
It's on from the 19th to the 26th of October. So during that week, on any day that week, if people want to do any activities, you know, like I say, a Wear Yellow and Shine event, or it could just be a fundraiser, it could, whatever it may be. But that week is what we've defined as our Awareness Week. It's absolutely incredible, really, for what is a growing community. I mean, it's quite a small community compared to other charities, but our community is very, very active, I would say. And they have been brilliant in fundraising for us, doing activities. And this could be people with spina bifida and or hydrocephalus, or it's the parents of children who've got the conditions. And it's amazing. They feel inspired to do fundraising for us. We're very active on the social media side of things, using Facebook and Google Hangouts and Twitter. Our social media guy here, Darren Fowler, he's plugging various events and projects that we're involved in within Shine. So when our members are seeing this on Facebook, and if there's one particular project or an event, you know, something, a subject that we've hit on our social media, it strikes a chord with them, and then they feel inspired to look, do you know what, that's something I can do, or that's something I really feel strongly about and I want to raise money for that. And then they set about, without any sort of encouragement from us, they set about going and doing their own fundraising events. And, you know, we'll get calls every day from members all around the country saying we're either planning to do an event, or they've just done an event and they've raised money and they're sending us a check for, you know, X amount. So these members of our community are absolutely, you know, vital for our existence.
I was going to say, it's reported that you've got at least 75,000 members, do you know what I mean, and fundraisers, so...
That's quite
big.
The numbers are massive. Each time we're plugging an event or plugging some sort of project or some sort of support and advice within the charity, we're reaching thousands of people, and these people are then feeling inspired to raise money for us. Going to be almost 70, and she is absolutely incredible. I mean, as well as doing the skydive, which in itself is something even I wouldn't think about doing. About, you know, I'd rather keep my feet and wheels on terra firma, to be honest. But she's done a skydive, and fair play to her. But she's another example where, I mean, she comes to lots of events. She's a volunteer. She turns up to a number of our events of her own, you know, time and effort. And she takes part and she gets involved. She encourages other people. She meets other members. She gets them involved just through her connection. And that's really important to us as well, because as each new member joins, they want a reason for joining. It's not always, oh well, I've got the condition, I want to join. They want to know what the benefits are for them. But if they can see other people around them are passionate and they want to do fundraising and they want to raise awareness, then it just might flick a switch in them and say, do you know what? Oh, these people are pretty passionate. Do you know what? I'm going to do something. And then their friends realise that they're passionate about doing something, and then it's like a ripple effect. And so, you know, we're spreading the word just because of one person taking part in an activity.
And it snowballs, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean?
It does snowball. You know, fundraising doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be a chore or anything difficult, like, you know, scary like skydiving. I mean, some people can do sponsored walks, they can take part in runs. I mean, in this country, we have people who are quite athletic and into triathlons and marathons and cycling anyway. So if they're doing that anyway for their own well-being or their own competitive nature, we can encourage them to say, look, well, why not do it for charity? So it's a bit of a double whammy. It's www.shinecharity.org.uk. That's the website address.
Yeah.
And on Facebook, you can just search Shine Charity, and the page will come up. And on Twitter, the handle is at Shine UK Charity. So again, on Twitter, you can find us on there, and we will be promoting stuff on there. And people can engage with us in a number of ways. They can make comments on things. They can send us pictures. We actually encourage people to send in their pictures of various things we've got. One of the more fun projects, I suppose, or it's not even a project, I guess, is we have our little mascot Benny Bear, and he's a little cuddly toy, rather cute looking thing. And what we do is we encourage people to, you know, buy a Benny Bear, but then take him around whenever they go on their travels, on holiday or visiting around the country. And if they meet any celebs or if they're at a landmark, we get them to send a picture. And so far we've had folks come in from Egypt and Australia and New Zealand. Plus, you know, he's just come back from the set of Coronation Street. And so, wow. So you know, there's photographs of Benny Bear at these rather popular locations. And a simple thing like that can, again, help raise awareness of...
And of course, it's fun, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a bit of fun. And you know, we see people sending in pictures of Benny in all sorts of places. And, and like I say, it's a simple thing to do. And if you get Benny in a landmark or with us, you know, if you're fortunate enough to get a celebrity holding Benny Bear, those who don't know about the charity soon do find out about the charity, because they're like, well, that celebrity, well, we know who that is, or that landmark, we know that what that landmark is, but what's the bear about? So then when we send our pictures in, or when we post pictures up on the wall, we tag Shine Charity or Benny Bear on it, and straight away they can see, oh right, okay, that's Benny Bear at Coronation Street, but what's Benny Bear? They click on Benny Bear, they can find out about the charity. So simple but fun thing to do, but it's getting the message out there.